The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We've now had 6 full months of the second administration of Donald Trump, and there's no sign of any slowdown in the barrage of news coming from the White House. On Friday, Trump issued a $10 billion lawsuit against the Wall Street Journal after it had published a letter they say Trump sent to Jeffrey Epstein for his 50th birthday. He also threatened to block the Washington Commanders football team's new stadium should they fail to revert back to their old name, the Redskins. Now, joining us to go through all of this and more is Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway, columnist with thejournal.ie. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk about Epstein, that letter via Ghislaine Maxwell, sent from Trump for Epstein's 50th birthday. The Wall Street Journal is saying, this is real, this is kosher. Trump is saying, no, it's not.
Well, first of all, the Wall Street Journal is a very serious, august publication. One, it should be noted, that has a conservative editorial line and is owned by Rupert Murdoch. The idea that they would publish this piece with all these details and not have the goods would absolutely shock me. But I will say that you mentioned Epstein in the promo and all the controversy as of late and what was wounding him within his MAGA base. To some extent, this is a godsend for Donald Trump because we've already seen some signs of people who were within MAGA who were critical of him now saying, we need to circle the wagons. The mainstream media is after our guy again. We need to be firmly in Donald Trump's corner. So this could actually help him out of a jam.
Now, the question of whether or not it's real, I mean, his denials that he never doodled anything, I don't draw. And then, of course, there are drawings that he made for charity. Or at least he claimed he did, because he signed them and authenticated them, and they were auctioned for charity. So Trump does draw.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, his denials are rubbish. I mean, they don't pass the smell test. But on the other hand, Pat, it is interesting to see how will the Wall Street Journal pivot in reaction to this lawsuit? Will they produce the goods? Will they produce whatever it is that was the basis for them publishing this piece? So I think everybody's waiting to see now that the lawsuit has been filed, how will the Wall Street Journal answer all of that? Of course, that'll be down to legal strategy. But we've seen in the past that Donald Trump has sued media outlets, and indeed some of them have given in and settled with him for millions of dollars. I'm not sure how this one will play out.
Yeah. I mean, is Murdoch someone that Trump can, if you like, pardon me using the phrase, slap around?
Well, to an extent, you know, perhaps he can. I mean, Murdoch is no fool, but at the same end, Murdoch is a pretty robust individual himself with no shortage of money. But at the same time, Murdoch is keenly aware that a lot of his media organs are dependent upon ardent supporters of Donald Trump. So he will have one eye on that as well. And again, this demonstrates the extraordinary influence Donald Trump has been able to wield. Of course, presidents of the United States have huge influence, but Donald Trump is all over the place, and he's not afraid to use the presidency as a bully pulpit to silence media organizations and anyone else who conflicts with his agenda.
Now, that question of whether this is a slap lawsuit just to shut him up or just to perhaps fire a warning shot against other media outlets that might cover this story on foot of the revelations in the Wall Street Journal. So this is a silencing action, if you like.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. It's a silencing action, but also it goes back to the point I made earlier. The fact is Trump had a real problem, still does have a real problem. The Epstein files is something that is definitely dividing his base, some of whom say they're drifting away. They won't support him again. I'm not so sure about that. But it is the first time ever that I can recall that we've seen any flagging in the loyalty of the MAGA base. And Trump knows how important that is to his continued credibility. To govern. So, you know, I think that part of this is to get them back in his corner and remind them he is their guy fighting a battle against the mainstream media, the elites, and all the other people in America who they hate.
Now, you're a legal person, Larry, so you can explain to us. Trump has asked for the Department of Justice, who then in turn has sought the release of grand jury testimony in the Epstein case. Now, it's not as easy to do that because normally this testimony, which leads perhaps to charging someone or not charging them, is sealed.
it's sealed, and this is in the hands of the judiciary. This is not something you can simply get. So again, how that one will play out remains to be seen. And it is perhaps because you know that the lack of likelihood or the improbability that some of this stuff will come to light. Maybe he's hoping, look, guys, I tried my best to get this stuff for you, but it's not forthcoming. It should also be noted that the request is quite limited. It says the pertinent information, and who knows what pertinent exactly means. The problem here is Donald Trump really has ridden to the White House in some respects on creating and on festering and spreading conspiracy theories. And a lot of people within his base believe in it ardently. They believe that there's a list of people engaged in all sorts of activities here. And now that it turns out that there probably isn't, Trump is scrambling.
Now, the other extraordinary thing he's done, he wants the Washington Commanders, who used to be the Washington Redskins, to change their name back to the Redskins. And if they don't, he's going to punish them.
Yeah, I mean, it remains to be seen exactly how he can punish them. But this, again, Pat, is really an effort to unify and unite his base. I mean, the move away from those names. And again, me, like most Americans of my age, I find it hard to call the Washington football team anything other than the Redskins, because that's what they were forever and a day. But this is a real sign, a real signal in their face to people who say America's gotten way too politically correct. This is stupid. They're the Redskins. They're the Cleveland Indians. These, you know, Native Americans who wanted to change things. Everybody else wanted those names to stay. This was giving in to the left, and let's get it back because the culture has shifted as a result of Trump's election. Mm-hmm. But again, this is a distraction technique.
Of course it is. And he said, our great Indian people in massive numbers want this to happen. Their heritage and prestige is systematically being taken away from them. Times are different now than they were 3 or 4 years ago. We are a country of passion and common sense. Owners, get it done. Now, the question is, you know, they're not Indian. India is, as we know, in Asia. They are Native Americans, misnamed by the people who colonized them.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, there's a long history of horrific treatment of the Native American people by those who settled. It is a black mark in American history, one that I don't think ever can ever be forgiven. And we still see the stains and how Native Americans have been treated over the years. If you go to Native American reservations where they were forced to live, you'll see some pretty tough stuff, some pretty dire conditions. And it does result from how they've been treated for many years. And leaders in that community did want these changes to happen. They thought they promoted stereotypes, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that they made a valid case. And I think that that should be respected. However, for an awful lot of Americans, they say, wait a second, this is another bow to political correctness. We're not going to have this. We're not going to go for this. And the other thing, Pat, again, this is why Trump is such an interesting character at one level. Donald Trump actually did reasonably well in terms of votes from Native Americans, indeed got some endorsements from Native American leaders as he sought the presidency. So again, with Trump, it's extremely complicated.
Now, I want to go international now because we spoke earlier about the current situation in Gaza, and you may remember back in February when Trump suggested a takeover of the Gaza Strip. But this is what his press secretary had to say when asked if this was still on the table.
As for the takeover of Gaza, I don't believe the president ever said that. I think he discussed a rebuilding of Gaza once this war is over.
Now, that's what she said. That's Caroline Levitt. I don't believe the president ever said that. Well, this is what he actually said. Have a listen.
The U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip, and we will do a job with it, too. We'll own it and be responsible for dismantling all of the dangerous unexploded bombs and other weapons on the site, level the site and get rid of the destroyed buildings, level it out, create an economic development that will supply unlimited numbers of jobs and housing for the people of the area.
And he was asked then, were they going to buy it? No, we won't have to buy it. It's rubbish. Nothing there. Nothing to pay for. We'll just take it. That's what he said to finish that quotation. So Gaza, Trump, you know, he knows that what Netanyahu is doing can only be done with his say-so, and his say-so is carry on.
Well, the first thing is that, you know, Donald Trump, virtually everything he says is either an outright lie or a total exaggeration. And when you're going to be Donald Trump's spokesperson in turn, you are naturally going to have to engage in the same sort of thing. And that's exactly what we saw there. In terms of Gaza and in terms of what's going on, obviously, it's horrific. We see it every single day. Yet the fact is that Trump, you know, obviously he does want peace. He has pushed for it. But at the same time, he is not going to dare run afoul of Netanyahu, of his agenda. And that's largely because of IPAC and its allies in the United States, as well as that the evangelical Christians, who are such a fundamental component of the Republican Party, who are also squarely behind Israel. And at a time where, as I've said, MAGA looks like there may be a little bit of division, he's going to do everything possible he needs to shore up his coalition and his support.
Now, I'm glad you said coalition, because MAGA is a coalition of people, all who wanted a bit of something from Donald Trump, and by and large, he's been delivering for them on the southern border and so on. It's doubtful, though, that in when he's gone, and he will inevitably leave the presidency, whether by dint of old age after a fourth, fifth or sixth term, or whether he will go properly at the end of this second term, doubtful that someone like J.D. Vance could hold that bizarre coalition together.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think to some extent, whoever follows him will be somebody who will lose elements of that coalition, but will need to regain some more traditional conservative voters, you know, some of whom, not a huge amount, but some of whom have drifted away because they're revolted by Trump. So that is going to be a huge challenge for whoever comes next. But in the immediate term, in terms of coalition, we talked about 6 months of Trump's presidency. He has staked an awful lot on this big, beautiful bill. And when we look at that coalition, that unlikely coalition, a lot of whom are people in America who are struggling, who are living at or near the poverty line, the big, beautiful bill is going to hit them. It's going to hit them, and potentially it's going to hit them hard. When that happens is key to watch. And if they turn, if they get angry, if they stay home even at the midterms, that's going to be really, really important to watch.
Now, what is also interesting is the budget for ICE, which is going to give them massive firepower and manpower, and they're pretty well paid compared to other kind of members of various security forces and so on. But the question is approval ratings for the way ICE are carrying out their business and the way immigration is being regarded. It's turned on its head. And most people now do not approve of the way Trump is running things.
Yeah, Pat, and this is something we spoke about earlier on, where you know, earlier in his term, where we said, look, you know, immigration, you know, people oppose the illegal immigrant in theory. They think America has too many immigrants. But then when it comes down to their local communities, and as we're seeing, particularly in border states, but around the country, as we're seeing people who haven't committed crimes, people who are part of communities, people who have made friends, people who do jobs around the area, as we see them being deported, a lot of Americans are saying, wait a second, we don't approve of this. This is not what we wanted. We wanted criminals out, et cetera, et cetera. We did not want the guy who cuts my lawn or the woman who minds my child. We didn't want them to be gone. So yes, it is rebounding upon him slightly. Immigration is still a good issue for him, but yes, the heavy-handed tactics aren't going down well with Americans.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw a video of the father of three Marines being done in by ICE and brutally treated as they arrested him. I'm just wondering whether or not Trump is effectively, by bankrolling ICE the way he has done, is he effectively creating a force like Hitler's brown shirts?
Well, I think that's probably taken a little bit too far, but yeah.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether, you know, when you assemble a paramilitary force like this, eventually they're going to run out of targets for their ICE activities. Perhaps they'll find others.
Well, I certainly hope we don't go down that road in the United States of America. But, you know, look, what ICE is doing, and they're treating people appallingly, there's no doubt about that. But their ultimate goal is to remove them from the United States. There's no sign that the ultimate goal here is their extermination.
But are they taking on the Chechen mafia in New York? Are they taking on the Russian mafia in New York? You know, the well-known ne'er-do-wells seem to be impervious to ICE's efforts.
Yeah, I think that there's definitely an element of truth to that. I think there's probably some low-lying fruit, the people who are easiest to get. Again, they all have targets as to how many people they need to deport. It's a lot easier to go to a Home Depot and pick up a group of people who are waiting to do day labor rather than, as you say, people involved in organized crime and have guns and other such things. So yeah, I think the low-hanging fruit are sadly the ones who are getting deported first.
Finally, Larry, we should talk about visas. This announcement, and it's buried in the big, beautiful bill, that if you want a visa for the United States, you have to pay $250. So this is a charge for verifying your social media and all the rest before you get a visa.
Yeah, it's extraordinary. It needs to be said that it doesn't apply to visa waiver countries like Ireland, but it does apply to many countries in the world. And what it is sending, Pat, is a big signal to the rest of the world. It's basically saying, we don't want people here. You are not welcome to come here. And that is deeply sad. Although it might be satisfying in the short term to people who don't want immigrants in the United States, a lot of these people could make very valuable contributions to America in so many different ways and who could benefit from spending time in America and could improve America's reputation in the world by being in the United States. We're telling them not to come. And that's very sad. It's not what our country was founded upon.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the journal.ie. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.